The Rose and the Sword. What is satsang, actually? The university of life where everything falls apart. Everything you know, everything you try to hold on to, everything you are clinging to, all your convictions, all your being right, all your position, all of you. What happens in satsang? Satsang means gathering in truth. When we use the word truth in these meetings, it points to that which is always true, what is unchangeable and immeasurable. That cannot be expressed in words. Even so, we have many names for it, all of which carry the aroma of the unnameable in them. True nature, undivided essence, or a bit less abstract, your true home, where peace lives alongside freedom, unconditional love, and great compassion. The remarkable thing is that these words, charged with the Shakti of the Master, have the capacity to permeate so deeply that you recall your essence. You realize that you have never left home. Somewhere inside you, you have always known this. But it seems as if you cannot access this awareness by yourself. It needs to be touched within you. It needs to be illuminated. The transformative power of the word throws light in your heart. This is a marvel only available from those in whom the word has been realized. There is a nice story that comes from India. One day, a woman visits her master with her son and says, "Master, my son eats so many sweets and it's bad for his teeth. Will you please speak to him?" The master replies, "Come back in 6 weeks." The woman and her son return home and come back, as instructed, 6 weeks later. "Do you remember what I asked you for?" says the mother. The master turns to her son and says, "Now, my child, you mustn't eat so many sweets, because it is bad for your teeth." The mother looks at the master astounded and cannot help but inquire, "But why didn't you say this last time?" He answers, "I couldn't say that because at the time, I ate far too many sweets myself." What should a seeker ask themselves if they want to enter a spiritual path? I would suggest the person consider the following. Do I want to bring my life to its highest potential? Do I want to live with my feet firmly on the ground and take complete responsibility? Do I want to leave judgments behind? Am I willing to leave complaining behind, along with excuses? Do I have the sincere desire to no longer constrict myself by any idea whatsoever? Do I truly want freedom? Do I yearn to live love? And do I want all of this more than anything else? I think you have to take that decision at some point in life and never deviate from it. The strength of your decision and the inspiration of the spiritual teacher will pull you through any situation. Be patient and never give up. Is the help of a teacher indispensable? For me, it was such a grace to be aligned with a spiritual teacher. The teacher shows the way, lights your path, and makes you aware of potential pitfalls. You are loved unconditionally. You are strengthened and inspired. What a grand gift. There are, of course, examples of awakened beings, such as Ramana Maharshi and Ananda Maima, who had no contact whatsoever with the living master. But for most of us, a master is a profound and essential blessing, taking us where we could not go ourselves. How do you find a guru? intense longing for freedom has been the magnet that through the ages, in an often mysterious way, brought you into contact with your guru. In this passionate and trusting togetherness, your heart would be opened and freedom revealed. Nowadays, you can search for gurus on the internet to weigh and compare them. Spirituality has become a kind of consumption, a repetition of interesting experiences. By following the urge for novelty, roaming spiritual courses and satsangs here and there, one cannot really go deep. But then, many often don't really want to be touched. They prefer to stay secure within the borders of personal comfort. Awakening is utterly shaking you up. Awakening is freeing. It is not necessarily comfortable. How can you let a guru in? Allow trust, allow fear, allow surrender, allow everything. Listen to the teaching, listen to your heart, without interpreting anything at all. True knowing is immediate. It has no memory, it has no opinion, and it doesn't need help from any interpretation. Now. New. Every moment, new. Does a teacher know all the answers? A teacher knows nothing at all, let alone answers. The student often thinks it's about answers and compiles them in their memory. It is up to the teacher to again and again dismantle this collection, inviting the student to enter the wide open space of nothing. How do you determine whether a teacher is the right one for you? After a period of attending satsang, ask yourself whether you have found more clarity and insight. No longer let nice or not nice chart your course, but only your desire for freedom and love for truth. This passion will guide you through everything, because in every sadhana, you will meet both the rose and the sword, the love, and the apparent harshness of immediacy. But a pearl of wisdom can be found in every challenge. Be grateful for the insightful realizations and experiences, and always be prepared to sharpen your capacity to discern. Life will go on testing you. How much you are willing to yield, how transparent you are, how unconditional is your love, and how great your compassion. Is there a difference between men and women on this path? I don't see men or women. I see the heart. That is where we meet. Every person is unique, and there are just as many paths as people on them. After Alexander, your first teacher, you went to Shantimai. After a period in Lucknow with Papaji, Shantimai came into my life. During our very first conversation, I told her that there was only one thing I wanted, to sit with her in silence until the end of time. As she was always on the move, I travelled with her around the world for many years. Those trips were always dynamic and busy. Exactly the opposite of the stillness I was looking for. The satsangs did not inspire me anymore, but I continued to go, absorbed in meditation during each one. All those busy days, nothing happened. Everything was barren and empty to me. After a while, also, this experience of emptiness disappeared. I realized that emptiness was a concept too. However, even the experience of emptiness was necessary to have all points of view unify. And then? Gradually, in the midst of all activity, the domain of awe-inspiring silence opened up. The great longing was nowhere to be found, nor was any notion of myself. Through these years of giving satsang, I observed that people often put aside elevating spiritual concepts too early. Concepts such as freedom, emptiness, the path, God, self-realization. Nourish yourself with these words and images. Drink in these intensely powerful words that come to you from the books and the masters. These words can disclose themselves to you and transport you to their revelation, to the revelation of emptiness. Let these concepts breathe in you and allow existence to open itself to you. Do not deprive yourself of the possibility of this disclosure by establishing as conviction what is offered as a pointer. Is that a form of sabotage? You obstruct your unfolding when it is based on half-digested non-dual teachings. You ward off a certain situations with, for instance, oh, everything is illusion. Everything is one. I have no choice. I cannot do anything. Whilst right here and now, the capacity to discriminate should be honed. All pointers to your essential being, every hint, every concept, can be used either to sabotage yourself or to deepen your insight. The words have the capacity to bring you home in all-pervading silence. That is why complete sincerity is so important. Simply and honestly seeing the situation as it is. Not as it was, not as it should be, but quite simply as it is. Life needs no conditions, needs no commentary, explanation, or interpretation. Can that be practiced? Lay down everything and do nothing. Listen to the wind in the trees. Hear the tram bell. See a child skipping in the street. A man repairing a roof. Don't give it a name. Don't comment on anything. Just be present wherever your attention falls, that's all. Every day, a quarter of an hour. A revelation. What is the role of discipline on the spiritual path? The word discipline often makes us think of strictness, but it really means learning, accepting instruction, the Dharma. The disciple needs to be open and willing to receive the teaching. It is a lifelong passion and dedication. In satsang, you are inspired. Wisdom is awakened in you and love deepens. And in everyday life, you will be shown what you have seen through and are thus challenged to live your insights. When I was a child, disciple was the most beautiful word I knew, even though I didn't know what it meant. It was my secret word. I pictured myself being a disciple as a grown-up. It seemed the most wonderful way to live, though I didn't know what it entailed. So you see again, somehow, subtle knowing is always slumbering in your heart. Was the child that so loved the word disciple happy? That child grew up in a stable family where she lacked nothing. Even so, I was not really happy. I was never really fulfilled. I felt so lonely and lost. And even thought that that was normal. I remember when I was at secondary school thinking, if only I could live in Amsterdam, study medicine and have a boyfriend, then I will be happy. And you know what? One day I lived in Amsterdam, had a boyfriend and studied medicine. All my desires were fulfilled and still I was not happy. That was a huge shock. I was 19 and had no desires anymore. Then I knew for certain that the happiness of the world was never going to fulfill me. I called out to the universe for help. 10 years later, I met Alexander and discovered that it was possible to free myself from that existential loneliness. At last, my sadhana could begin, and I threw myself into the purifying fire. The love emanating from my teachers, wedded to my own grit and dedication for many years, saw me receive countless insights and realizations. Ultimately, the unknowable origin was revealed, and the painful sense of I vaporized. Did you then start to give satsang immediately? Only after Shanti Mai had urged me to give satsang 3 times did something begin to move in me. Over time, the satsangs expanded and became central to my life. What a privilege it is. What trust from my masters, as well as from all the people who come to satsang and open their hearts. This is my life now for so many years. But there is no one who gives satsang. The teaching is not a teaching. There is no path that leads to self-realization. This sounds very radical. Surely something is happening. The true essence of all manifestation is consciousness. Essentially, nothing happens. It is simply still. That said, when I had just begun giving satsang, a desire welled up to take the whole world in my arms. A desire to do what I can to alleviate suffering. A desire once again. Desires can well up freely. They are empty, made of light. The mass is removed, the weight of expectation and possible disappointment. Neither is there the weight of an assumed identification. Although desires may call, I realize only too well that essentially the world and all suffering have no inherent reality. Everything is imagined. This is fully in line with the spirit of the Satya tradition, the line of masters I am aligned with via Shanti Mai. Her master, Sri Hansaraj Maharaji, clearly seeing the emptiness of existence, was absorbed for many hours a day in meditation and prayer, praying for the awakening of all. Prayer can be viewed as a request, spoken from God to God. Maharaji's master Satyababa beheld that even though the world was an expression of God, it was sunk in a deep sleep. Compassion overwhelmed him, and one day this prayer rose from within. Prabhuaba jago, Paramatma jago, Mirasarva jago, Saravatra jago, Prabhuaba jago, Paramatma jago. Wake up, God. Wake up in me. Wake up in everyone. Wake up in the whole world. This mantra has been chanted daily for many decades in Maharaji's Vedic ashram. This is India, where mantras are a natural part of culture. The expression of self-realization is different for everyone, but wisdom, love, and compassion are always in full bloom. What do you see as the essence of mantras and prayer? A mantra is a vibratory formula, a precision frequency that sends a signal to consciousness. Mantras are used to open the heart or to bring a certain result. The most well-known mantra is Om. It is the same word as Amen that we know in Christianity. There was a time when people spoke in mantras. The spoken word was layered, charged with meaning. The rishis had the capacity to be so subtly aware that they could see the mantras. They also saw the frequencies of the body. The vibration of our breathing, for instance, is expressed in the mantra Hamsa Soham. Hamsa Soham. Hamsa Soham. Breathing in, Hamsa. Breathing out, Soham. And that means, who am I? I am that. Who am I? I am that. In the Satya lineage, the Gayatri mantra is given great prominence. The word Gayatri means meter or rhythm, and it also means protection. Gayatri is one of the oldest prayers of humanity, a prayer for peace for everyone. It is said that all knowledge is born from the Sanskrit vibrations of the Gayatri mantra. It is said that this vibration is identical to the universal life force, and that her recitation can lead you to awakening. Both listening to and reciting this mantra have a healing effect. For centuries, this mantra was secret and only given to Brahmin priests who let it resound within. These days, the Gayatri mantra is accessible to everyone. Because she is universal, she belongs to no single religion. The Hindus have had the Gayatri mantra in their care for ages, and this mantra has been given to the world via them. Within my ashram in France, the Gayatri mantra is recited daily. Om Bhur Bhuvasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dimahi Diyo Yonaha Prachodayat. Throughout all realms of experience, that essential nature illuminating existence is the adorable one. May all beings perceive through subtle and meditative intellect the magnificent brilliance of enlightened awareness. What would the world be like if there were no meditation and prayers for peace on earth? Does the world ever get any better? Is there not always war, violence, and oppression, despite so many people's great efforts? Time and again, there is the desire to improve a situation. Nowadays, there are many initiatives committed to the preservation of nature and the world. Think of the magnificent inspiration of Jesus, Buddha, and the countless monks and nuns throughout the world, meditating in temples and churches for centuries. Are we becoming wiser? Is there more tolerance and compassion? Are we really taking care of our precious living earth? There is an ancient indigenous tribe in the Sierra Nevada in Colombia. They are called the Kogis, and their life is dedicated to the protection and preservation of the balance of nature on earth. At the end of the last century, they spoke out for the first time in 400 years. They wanted to warn younger brother, that's us, about the disastrous repercussions our way of living is having on nature. They invited the BBC to make a film about them because they no longer felt capable of maintaining the balance in the world through their meditations and ceremonies. They said that younger brother needs to acknowledge that he has to live totally differently. In the film, they show us what they know about the balance of humanity, nature, and the spiritual world. The realized ones among them, known as mamas, express it in this way. If we mamas die, who then is going to care for the heart of the world? If we mamas die, no rain will fall. The trees will not grow, the rivers will dry up, and everything will become black. Or will it still rain? Will the trees continue to grow and the rivers flow? In their dedication, the mamas don't presume any result. They say their prayers and perform their ceremonies. They don't force anything. That is the attitude of the Bodhisattva. So mantra and prayer are pretty important. If you enjoy them and love them, recite mantras and say your prayers. It always does good, But as long as you think that the practice of whatever is going to facilitate your freedom, you are delaying your awakening. Freedom is now, not the result of years of practice. Realize that no method or means are adequate to live immediacy. You can only increase your receptivity, such as in meditation, prayer, or reciting mantras. See your journey as without purpose. Realize that you are awakening, letting in more and more space and light, and expanding beyond all boundaries. Does space not have a boundary? Space ends where time ceases. What is the quickest way? Surrender. Surrender your convictions, your assumptions, your doubts, your ambitions, your past and your expectations. Surrender your insights and all that you have ever learned. When your whole being is emptied out, fulfillment will overwhelm you. My life keeps on getting better. Your awakening journey influences your whole life. It is medicine for your total well-being. You become clear and direct in your communication. You see a lot. Your vision becomes more subtle and wide. You are less and less identified, and your creativity and talents blossom unhindered. What does guru mean? Guru is a Sanskrit word and means teacher. In India, you can have a guru for music, for instance, or for dancing lessons. In spiritual circles, the word guru is also used to denote teacher. The word is made up of gu, which means dark, and ru, which means light. The guru who guides you on your inner path to self-realization, the Satguru, is essentially not a person but a principle. The principle that takes you from the darkness of ignorance to the light of truth, so that the slumbering wisdom can awaken in you. And if your physical guru dies, many people remain loyal to their master after they have died, but it is really the principle that you remain loyal to, not a person. Stay faithful to your desire for self-realization. Stay faithful to truth. The connection and the love are unbreakable, even after her or his death. I suggest people find a living guru again. The psyche is so subtle, and so quickly does one assign reality to a concept. With the clear sight of a guru at your side, you more easily become aware of the hidden habits and convictions in your life. Don't let this possibility escape you due to misplaced ideas about remaining loyal. There are not multiple gurus. Guru is one. It shows itself in your teacher, in your heart, and in life itself. Let's stop making divisions in any aspect of life whatsoever, not just between this and that guru, but also between you and me, between inner and outer, or spiritual life and social life. See that merely the idea of ego ensures such a painful feeling of isolation. It is time to leave all ideas of separation behind, including the idea of yourself, and see the all-encompassing oneness of existence. That awareness of oneness, is that your ultimate teaching? Grace is waiting for you inside that awareness to take you to silence where mystery can be unveiled. A complete relaxation in simplicity and naturalness. Nothing special. Ordinary, extraordinary. Would you call your satsangs Advaitic? I passionately love Advaita Vedanta, as received from my first masters. With Shantimai, we receive teachings from other non-dual traditions as well, such as Mahayana Buddhism, Chan and Zen. I pick from a large garden, in which Advaita is one of the flowers, a really beautiful one to be sure, but the source of all true teaching is one. Sometimes I'm very touched by a particular word. Keep that word with you. Don't try to understand it. Let it touch you thoroughly and totally. True understanding lies in the realm of love, where it reveals itself by itself. When a concept reveals itself to you fully, it loses meaning. Do not withdraw from any idea. Being fully merged with ideas, they cease to be. They die. And then clear knowing wells up, knowing that cannot be known. Is it ultimately about relaxation? Relaxation is often one of the last things that you allow. This permeates to the innermost of your cells, and most people need to spend a great deal of effort before they finally relax, before they surrender. How does that work in our instant society where we want everything immediately, including enlightenment? We not only live in an instant society, but also in a society of abundance, even as far as spirituality is concerned. Nowadays, you can find the most beautiful films and books that point to your real nature on YouTube and in every bookshop. In more and more countries, you can go to satsang every day. There is so much available and all within arm's reach. A while ago, you had to travel for many weeks to get to India, and then you had to begin to find a teacher in what were often remote areas. Now, you can fly there in one day with a book in your pocket containing all the information about where ashrams and masters can be found. Everything is so available, and that can lead to superficiality. But radical spirituality is about infinite deepening, where you need qualities like humility, perseverance, and boundless patience. It is so hectic in our society. Is it not tempting to withdraw to an ashram? Do you think that in an ashram you can escape from your mental brewing? If you want truth, there is no way to escape it. Wherever you live, whatever you go through, truth will show itself to you. It will show itself in the form of delusion. Live fully and realize that your true self is untouchable. In the world, but not of it. Like a duck in the water, but not wet itself. Be free. Free from illusions of attachment. Free from ideas of identification. Free from fear and guilt. Free. It doesn't matter whether that's behind the till at the supermarket, in the office at home with the children, or in an ashram. With your attention constantly directed to that, just like a mother's attention is always with her baby, whatever she does, her attention is with her child, even when she sleeps. As soon as her baby cries, the mother wakes up. That attention.